You are listening to 91.5 KIOS FM, Omaha Public Radio. We're celebrating 50 years, half a century of public radio in Omaha, starting in September of 1969 here on KIOS. I'm Todd Hatton, Program Director here at KIOS. And we are joined in the studio now by a comparatively new voice, and that new voice belongs to Michael Lyon. Of course, around here, new means within about 20 years.
Not much new about me, Todd. Yeah. I was born a little bit before 1969, but I've been here 14 or so years now.
So you've seen a little bit of the recent passing of time.
I wonder what you were going to say there. Yes.
So did I.
You know, time passes, and I would say that there was nothing significantly that happened till the last year or so, with the transformation of the studios and bringing our technology up to speed with the rest of the world, so that we can actually produce things of better quality, improve our content, and make more of it.
Now, you what year did you start hosting Morning Edition?
2005.
2005, and I myself hosted Morning Edition in another life, and in 2007. So I can't imagine the show was too appreciably different for me than it was for you when you started. It was Steve Inskeep and Renee Montagne.
Mm-hmm.
And although Renee is no longer regularly on the program, she does show up from time to time as almost kind of a special correspondent, like Susan Stamberg, who will be our guest next week.
Carl Castle was the newsreader.
Oh, yeah.
The wonderful Carl Castle.
Who I have, my wife has a plushie of him. sitting on the bookcase of Carl Castle, and it's astounding because everybody asks who that is, and I get to explain that to them.
Yeah.
So over the years, you saw we've gone. What did they have in terms of technology? That's really what I'm getting at. I mean, what are we talking about? Are we still talking about reel-to-reels?
Well, not exactly. Yeah. Although there were reel-to-reels in the studio, and our board was updated, as were several of the other things. I think KIOS had a not major, but medium renovation a few years beforehand.
Right.
And but we were still working. We didn't have access, for example, to using flash drives or any of the other memory storage capabilities at that time. We were working. A lot of our shows went on to mini discs,
right.
And many those weren't regularly used by the public. But those were 2.5-inch square discs that you couldn't actually, even though it was digital.
Yeah.
If you wanted to record them for posterity and be able to edit things on there, you actually had to play them in real time, an hour show, into an MP3 file, and then you could actually do something with it. So we did actually have a cassette recorder in our deck, which we used to use to record programs occasionally, and it was somewhat bare bones, but certainly not what one might think of as an old radio station.
Well, I mean, although I do have to point out that the public radio stations they'll wring every drop of usefulness out of a piece of equipment. You know, that's just part of being a responsible steward of the public trust. But I mean, I'll go into some stations. I do remember seeing they did a movie about Garrison Keillor called The Man on the Radio and the Red Shoes. And he is in the studios of WNYC, where they do Radiolab, for crying out loud. And he is working on a board that is, I mean, I almost expected to see giant vacuum tubes growing out of the back of it. But it still worked like a charm, so they still used it. Mm-hmm. And that just makes sense. I mean, as long as you don't go into my basement or garage and see that I believe that on an almost fanatical level, still might be useful.
You know, people with whatever technology they're using tend to develop incredible facility with those technologies.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was not that long ago, and anybody that's worked in radio in any part of the country will remember years ago splicing tapes together.
I do.
To do the editing. There was no sort of digital editing, and yet people produced incredible programs, you know. It was very hard to layer sounds and to do the sorts of ambient cut-ins like you might hear programs like Radiolab or Invisibilia, where the music kind of edges in and then edges out again. So I think that has certainly, you know, the ability to use the new technologies and digital editing in particular has
certainly
helped make the product better.
Well, you know, I mean, I do know that the audio technology didn't really the fundamental medium didn't change. You still recorded on a big piece of magnetic tape for just about everything. Although the quality would improve as the components of recorders got smaller and more precise, but fundamentally you were still listening to a piece of tape or a record, a piece of vinyl that you put on a turntable and put a needle on. And then, of course, I can almost tell you right where I was in 1987 when I saw my first CD live and in person. You know, it was Fables of the Reconstruction by REM, incidentally. But, I mean, it just absolutely changed my life.
I will tell you one thing that has changed very much for the better around here. When we have completed our recent studio renovation, we've now created lots of space for people to come in, sit down at a microphone, and talk to us. And for many, many years, I would bring people in the mornings, and they would have to squeeze along about a foot and a half aperture along the side or the back of the console and squeeze into a very, very small area to actually sit and, be able to converse. And there was a cough button on one side of the thing, which didn't work. And occasionally people would press it and cough.
There you go. See, we don't have one now, I don't think.
Yeah. The other thing that happened with that was somebody had once turned up. Now, I won't name him, but he will know who he is if he's listening. Okay. Very, very well-known trombone player who plays both classical and jazz music at a very high level. And he is probably 6'4 or 6'5, and he showed up one day and squeezed himself behind the desk and proceeded then to take out his trombone. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, the person that arranged this, that I should bring this. And so I felt that I should allow him to play, which
well,
I did. And I wish I'd have had my camera or my phone with me at that time, because it was quite a sight to see this tall man playing beautiful music with this trombone in this incredibly small space. And he pulled it off without a hitch.
You make it sound like getting into a biplane. I mean, just kind of climbing up, clambering in. And
I think so, yeah.
My God. Well, and it really is quite astounding how the technology has changed in just the last 20 or 30 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've gone from having to use tape, because sometimes you'll go to a radio station, you'll see bolted to a surface is this little silver block that has a small groove in it that has two other small grooves. One is perpendicular, one's at an angle. And that's the splicing block that we used to have to use in the days of when editing was all linear. You couldn't really do nonlinear editing like you can in television and in radio today. It's really quite remarkable. And now it's almost kind of a curiosity more than anything else. But you lived and died by that. You put that razor blade down in that tape. Measure twice and cut once. It really actually, it was kind of a hair-raising experience. But now that we have moved more into the digital age, and we are, in fact, I'm sitting in front of a console that relies on digital audio almost entirely, a very big step, almost a generational advance in the technology that we're using to bring you it's content that still has the same devotion to quality, as you pointed out. Because that is ultimately what matters, that when, if we go to all this work of putting something together that you can hear it and understand it, it really is quite surprising. And when you transitioned into your current position working with underwriting, let's see, when did that happen?
Two Octobers ago, so coming up to 2 years now.
2 years. Mm-hmm. And so when you left Morning Edition, it was still very, very different than what it is now. But had it progressed any from when you got here?
Well, you know, every, 7 years or so, NPR will actually change what they call the clock for Morning Edition or All Things Considered, which is what we live and die by. And just to explain what that is, NPR very nicely provides us a a diagram that is like a clock with various segments in that say this is when things will happen, this is when you can insert things, you, the local station, and this is where we're always going to play this promo or this particular segment. And so that did change, and believe it or not, I don't believe I've heard any listener feedback to say, oh, we hate this new clock. You know, I would say for those of us, and I've always been in contact with Morning Edition hosts around the country, it's always been a very educational and even inspiring sort of set of relationships for me, because I've got to see what people have done across the country. And I know that en masse, we all had some difficulties with that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it almost seems as though NPR does it just to make sure we're staying awake.
Yeah,
Because they can change just the slightest little thing. I mean, they've done that only recently. Actually, it seems one little 15-second thing, and yet somehow that's necessitated emails and so on and so forth. Fortunately, that won't affect us at all. But it can be frustrating to say the least. But it's always a challenge.
Yeah.
Wait, do you have a particularly favorite story from your time here as Morning Edition host?
You know, there are many of them which would be, I think, inspiring. And that really relates to the people that I've met and what they're doing within this community. I believe, very fortunate to have such an array of people coming through here, many hundreds of interviews in the mornings. And it gave me what I like to think of as the 35,000-foot view of this community, and particularly some of the dynamics that were happening with people that were making a real difference, a significant difference. So it not only gave me that view, but it also established with me a connection with the community and with individuals and organizations within the community. And that's something which, you know, in this new role of mine, I feel that those connections are still there. And in my motivation on a day-to-day basis is to connect with people. You know, so that I believe I have in common with what I was doing. My goal, of course, is to raise revenue for the station so that we can do more and do better. But it all starts from those connections. And I think I feel very lucky to have that, because that in and of itself is a great purpose to have. But strangely enough, one of the things that I remember, and unfortunately the audio on this disappeared when our website provider changed services a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But before I was actually doing a lot of morning interviews, there was one April Fool's Day where I decided that I really wanted to do a produced piece. And so I produced a piece that was regarding a production of Hair put on by a visiting troupe of Scottish bagpipers.
Oh, boy.
And
I'm not sure I can conceive of where this is going, actually.
And so anyway, I had a mixture of the music from Hair,
right,
intermingled with the bagpipe music. I interviewed a fellow by phone who was actually me, mm-hmm, Mr. Hughie McPhee,
right,
who told me all about it, and described how the before or in between the shows, particularly in Western Nebraska, some of the pipers actually were enjoying going out into the rural parts of Nebraska in search of the wild Nebraska haggis. And I'm kind of sorry that that's gone, but it was fun.
Because, you know, if it had still existed, we would have just played it. Just to kind of give people a little bit of a snapshot of this is good radio. This is good radio.
There was actually one time, Todd, where and I don't think I did more than one stupid thing per year, but there was one year where it was Talk Like a Pirate Day. And
happens this month, by the way.
I didn't have any interviews scheduled for that day.
Right.
And so what I did was I read, here's what's happening in the area. But I did the entire 4 minutes talking like a pirate. And to this day, I have no idea why nobody called up and said, get that man off the air, which they probably should have done.
I'm going to just go out on a limb and say that that's one of the benefits of public radio is that, you know, there is a certain degree of connection between mm-hmm. us and the people who listen and listen regularly. And a connection, believe me, we are eternally grateful for because of what it enables. I'm going to back away before this sounds like I'm a pitch break, but it really is. They just probably collectively just went, well, that's just Michael. You know, I don't mean almost like, well, that's just Grandpa.
You know? I do have, you know, one of the things also that I would say that people don't think about very often, but, you know, people listen to the radio, they listen to announcers, and there are many, many, many times where we slip up, we'll mispronounce something, we'll spoonerize something, we'll just get it wrong. And you have, as an announcer, to just move on from that and make sure that, you know, for the rest of your time that day, you're better. But there is a listener who reminds me occasionally via Facebook that several years ago, I did announce something that was happening at the corners of 50th and Underwear rather than 50th and Underwood.
We all have our moments. Some of us have had more moments than others, to say the least. You know, I have to say, because we are getting to the point where we are beginning to need to wrap it up. We've got about 5 minutes before we get into Jazz in the Afternoon with Mike Jacobs. We probably could have spent another 2 or 3 hours mm-hmm. on the air talking about the station's past. We haven't even really been able to touch on the future of the station. And the remaining 3.5 minutes we have in the hour almost seem inadequate to the task. But I do think it's incumbent to kind of mention that we are always kind of casting our eye forward. Mm-hmm. It's just something you kind of have to do. We're always looking to help cultivate the next generation of listeners and listener members, the people that are going to sustain us for the next 50 years of KIOS.
And I want to add to that all of us here at KIOS are very committed to making this not only the only public radio station in the area, but the very best public radio station that you can listen to. And so we draw upon that heritage, those 50 years. We're very conscious of it, but I believe that we have such an enthusiasm now for bringing this listening audience things that are of quality and things that people need and are important, and in doing that in the best way possible. And I think there are a lot of things that have happened over the last year or two that will make that all the more possible from here on.
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely without a doubt. This doesn't happen. We say it every fund drive. This doesn't happen without the support of the community. And that is one of the reasons why we work very hard to make this radio of the community. This is going to be the most Omaha radio station that you absolutely can find. So, with that, like I said, we could take another couple of hours to talk more and more about this radio station and its history and its future. But I'm going to ask that you let's take the conversation online. Let's go on social media, Twitter, mm-hmm. Facebook, and talk a little bit more about it. You can always send us an email or give us a call with your questions, concerns, or even just to maybe a little gentle criticism, or even dare I say some praise because you've heard something that you found really compelling. But in the last couple of minutes, Michael Lyon, do you have anything to add?
No, but I'm thinking as I'm sitting here, I'm hearing some music in the background. Sounds like you have gas.
I do, indeed. Okay. I have
classical gas, I hasten
indeed.
To say.
Mason Williams, classical gas, is going to get us to the top of the hour where Mike Jacobs will take over with Jazz in the Afternoon. Thank you so much for pointing that out, Michael. I always appreciate it. Ken Dudzik, station manager, thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Todd. Don't forget about our open house today from 4 to 7 here at the Career Center for Omaha Public Schools.
We'll be here. Yes. We are really looking forward to seeing you. Come on down.
And, of course, then you can give us a little bit of gentle criticism in person or give us a talk about it. Maybe you have a show idea. Maybe you have a way that we can make public radio better for Omaha. that would be even more welcome. So I'm Todd Hatton, KIOS Program Director. I want to thank Barb Naughton for also stopping by and talking a little bit about the beginning of the station. We're going to let this go into 59 past the hour as we head into Jazz in the Afternoon. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.